Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Daily Dots. And coming at you fully loaded today. I've got the brain trust back in the saddle. Mr. Chase Taylor joining us. Finally got him to agree to come back in the office. The guy just doesn't want to work.
Mickey Mouse had a grip on me.
That's you were doing the homage. You're paying homage, if you will, right? The parental, say it's a parental duty, right? You're making this. You were sojourning. What do they call the trip back to Mecca? What a pilgrimage?
There you go.
Yeah, it's your parenting.
The Hajj.
So I can't even pronounce any words today. But no, you were doing the obligatory parental trip to the Disney factories, and the nice thing about them is they're very economical.
Yeah. If anything suggests inflation is still high, it's prices at Disney World.
Man, isn't that true, man? If you want a realization how expensive everything's got, just go visit a Disney park.
Yeah, if you have like a family of four and you want to spend a week there, you should probably take out a mortgage.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's why they started offering all these vacation financing packages, right?
Yeah.
Think about that. Have you ever thought about the ludicrous nature of that, right? When you issue debt, you're leaning an asset. How do you lean a vacation?
Yeah, I don't know what the collateral is for that. I guess
good times, guess
some like Mickey shirts or something.
Yeah, good times, just memories. Maybe they'll start selling, figuring out a way for people to buy memories or sell memories. Okay, so things were a little bit boring last week.
Well timed.
Yeah, they're not today. So let's start with the indexes. We'll just get that out of the way. Where did we finish on those?
Yeah, S&P up. About 0.9%. The Q is up about 1.2%. Small caps up 2%. Naturally, volatility was down. The dollar was down about 0.4%. Pretty big move there. And it had put in a kind of a new high on the day and then closed way below yesterday's low. So pretty nasty looking candle for the dollar. No surprise, bond yields were down except for the long end, which kind of stayed flat. Oil was down, but pretty much every other commodity, along with equities, just ripped on the Fed's press conference today.
Oil one was a little bit odd to me. Do you have any idea? Like, it was just kind of a standout.
I mean, it just went straight up for like 2 weeks, so
okay.
It deserved a breather.
Maybe deploying profits in some other attractive commodities.
Maybe.
Yeah. So let's get to the main part of the discussion here. The Fed. It ended up like we thought. As a matter of fact, we weren't very hedged going into it at all. But we lightened up those. I think you lightened up those hedges right before the meeting too, didn't you?
We put on a few longs right.
Yeah.
Headed in that we thought would benefit from dovishness, and sure enough, we got that.
They did. Yeah, that was some good work. What do you think about? So I'll let you take the lead here. Give us a summation before we get into analyzing it. Give us a summation of what Powell said.
I don't care that inflation went up the last couple of months. That's the most important thing he said. Paraphrasing, obviously, but that's pretty much what he said.
Yeah. He got pretty close to saying, yeah, inflation might be moving up, but we believe it's transitory. Kind of.
I mean, that's the inference, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose you could make the argument like, hey, we're not going to freak out over 2 months. Like if we jerk the steering wheel every time 2 months of data moves, like that would be a pretty ugly way to navigate an economy. You can make that argument. But, you know, they're turning the wheel really hard on 6 to 9 months of data. So I would argue 3 or 4 months, that's enough to start turning the wheel. And I don't get the feeling that a third hot print is going to change Powell's mind at this point.
It sure doesn't seem like
it. It feels to me like he's made his mind up.
It sure. Yeah, sure. Here's the. Well, you know what? I do think this is going to provide a wonderful litmus test, because if we are correct in thinking this, then I would expect this to be the start of another leg higher in the markets in general. Sure, what it looks like right now, right?
Yes.
Quite honestly, it makes me a little nervous because I don't really see anything to prevent it at this point.
You're at the point where you need something endogenous, or excuse me, exogenous, like
right.
exogenous shock, or like where systematic trips and start sailing to each other.
Yeah, other something that, weird happens.
Like, anything like normal or real? No, like you. This is.
But here's the deal: even if one of those things happen, it's probably just a buying opportunity. Because if anything, that's just going to get them to cut earlier.
Right.
Yeah, I could see them throwing an emergency cut at it.
Yeah, why not?
And they're still factoring in three cuts, which is 75 basis points of cuts.
Right, for the rest of the year, and we're, you know, almost April. So that's packed into a good bit of time. In fact, last time around, they put him on the spot on March, and he went out of his way to say, we're not cutting in March. This time they put him on the spot for May, and he would not go out of his way to say, we won't cut in May. So yeah. May, the next meeting is live. Right now it's June where everyone's pricing in the first cut, but I think May is wide open, personally. I think if the next inflation print is anything other than really hot, then they'll just take the chance to go in May. And part of the reason I think that is I think they are afraid this keeps going, and then they start looking really bad if they keep cutting. So to me, if you want to get one out of the way at least, you probably want to do it in May. So I would argue that there's a decent chance, as long as he can convince everyone else on the committee or enough people on the committee, I think May is very possible.
I can't imagine the people on the committee are going to fight him.
Not enough at the moment.
No, I just...
But even though they did keep in three, a few people will like kind of move their dots around to where like you almost went down to two cuts for the year. And you did take one out of 2025, but who cares about the next year, honestly?
Well, the interesting thing to me is that I think this provides a really good litmus test for us to test our theory that, I don't see any reason why this wouldn't drive markets higher. And like you and I have been saying, markets go higher, this inflation ramp isn't going to stop.
Yeah, exactly. There's a feedback loop there that does not get any respect. And just like the last few times he's talked and he took questions, like he got the questions about financial conditions. Like, hey, this is really loose. Like everything from obviously stock prices to credit prices, like it's hot out there.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, people were making up a new cryptocurrency every day and they go to the moon. Like, so he got that question, like, are you a little worried about that? And he's just like, no, like you could tell like does not care about asset prices whatsoever.
What do you think about the idea that, and it's not really esoteric, but it might be a little bit in the weeds, but what do you think about the idea that, and I've thought this for a while about the Fed, I cannot escape thinking or having the feeling that their view of a healthy operating an economy is we only see the conditions that they think are healthy in bubbles, right? Meaning if this is an environment that they want to cut into, I feel like what they're inherently saying is that they want to preserve the bubble-like atmosphere.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of true, but in my opinion, more to the point, what he's saying is 2% is not the inflation target
right,
anymore.
Right.
It's 2.5 right, maybe.
Right.
Now he's not going to literally say that. And he went out of his way to say, oh, we're still very committed to go all the way to 2%. And he even got the question, which the fact that he got this question tells you a lot. And so people are like, why? I mean, I don't know. Should the market really believe that? And he was like, yeah. Like, and he said, but he also said, you know, the inflation prints, quote, haven't changed the outlook, the overall story. He said, we continue to make good progress on bringing inflation down. Well, inflation literally went up for 2 months. And he said, we continue to make good progress. If you're going to do all that while you project 2.6% inflation this year and 2.2% next year, so not target, and you're going to cut, that just tells me like your target's not two.
It also leads me to believe that you're cutting for different reasons. And I'm not going to allege I know what those are, but it's hard to ignore the fact that this is an election year.
It is. I won't push back on that. I mean,
yeah, I'm not saying that's why they're doing what they're doing. I'm just saying you and I both know the Fed. We both, you know, you more so than I do, but we both probably pay a ridiculous amount of attention, you know, to those types of headlines and what they say compared to the average guy out there. But the thing that I think is so incredible is if you listen to these guys long enough and you listen to them talk about monetary policy, there is no part of this economy that warrants three cuts this year, according to what they say.
Yeah, I mean, their own projections are telling you some very important things. One, through 2025, inflation will be above target, growth will be above trend, and the labor market will be super tight. And all three of those things will be true, and we know we're going to still have the huge deficit.
And why are you cutting?
Right. Like that. Now, obviously, those cuts are part of those projections for growth and inflation, but to me, like that you should only be cutting if you think the labor market is going to loosen up. So if they, you know, if that projection had 4.5% unemployment rate later this year, then I think you can sell the fact that you're doing the cuts. You're like, hey, like, we're looking at some forward-looking things that suggest the labor market's really going to loosen up and can create problems. Or just come out and say, hey, look, yeah, credit spreads are really tight, but pretty obvious to us, like, you're going to have a big spike in bankruptcies and it's going to, like, really start to hurt the economy. Like, if that's your story, then, like, I'll listen. But when you're like, everything's great, it's going to stay great, and we're going to cut rates. That's why the market's going to be like, cool, well, then we'll see you guys on the moon.
Yeah, well, and then you mentioned, and I got no problem saying the guy's name because I think he's a complete hack, but Mark Dow on Twitter, good trader, but I just think he's a moron. But, it, you know, in there defending the Fed and saying, oh, you know, the Fed's right, and you sit there and you go, okay, so what you're telling me right now is they're preemptively cutting, but just 2 years ago, they didn't preemptively raise and got it 100% wrong, right? So why in the world do you have faith in a preemptive cut now?
Yeah, this I think a lot of people want to believe that this 2 months of hot inflation is just like a nothing burger and it's going to go away.
Yeah, we heard that before.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just look at gas prices. Gasoline futures are up 38% from their low in December.
Well, what do you think housing prices are going to do after 75 bips of rate cuts?
Well, if I'm right that the 10-year yield can stay high, then that can keep housing subdued. And we're finally starting to see this just came out of the last week, but housing completions finally ripped. So you're starting to see a lot of the stuff that's in the pipeline actually finally complete, but the key there is that could be the thing that finally lets go of some construction workers. But that's going to be interesting to watch in the next couple months. But so far, you haven't put even a small dent in construction.
Well, and I think there's still a lot of, I mean, I was telling people yesterday, we listed our home and less than 2 weeks ago and got a full price offer and we're under contract.
Yeah. And normal supply is 6 months and you're in 18 days of supply in Seattle right now.
Yeah.
It's still tight, but that it's because there's just no inventory.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, I mean, I see a perfect scenario for these cuts. Driving the market higher, driving fuel prices higher, driving housing prices higher.
If the dollar keeps doing what it's doing, I mean, I wrote my last weekly about metals. Like, just buy them all. Like, you pick a metal and then it's starting to like smell this and move higher. Yeah. Obviously, the more precious, the better. But I mean, silver was up 2% today, and
we'll see if I'm right. I also get the feeling I think that metals and commodities and things like Bitcoin are sniffing out the fact that kind of a general market realization of the fact that these guys are not playing the game that we think they're playing, that we're in QE forever. People are like, we're not running QE, and I'm like, I know we're not at the moment, but what I'm saying is. I think I've long thought, and you and I have had these conversations off air before, but I've long thought that when you go down this path, it's an economic roach motel, you can't get out of it. And that at some point the market wakes up and realizes, oh, they're never going to get tough again because they can't.
Yeah. And I think the market is
they're calling that bluff now.
Just this morning I was reading, I fell behind on reading, obviously, because I was on vacation. I was reading an article from like a week ago. Talking about how analysts were baffled at the move higher in gold. Like, there's nothing baffling about it. It's just gold is just like equities are figuring out, like, oh, the market, the Fed's going to cut while everything's still really strong. Like, that
But those same analysts understand completely. They think it's totally normal that Bitcoin's doing what it's doing.
I mean, it is. It makes perfect sense in this light, for sure.
Well, the other thing is, go look at the percentage moves.
I would argue, you know,
both made new all-time highs, not by a lot, but you know, by a measurable amount. I mean, they both acted identical. I mean, the amplitude of the move in Bitcoin is obviously bigger, but it's.
And the market keeps going sideways to down into NVIDIA earnings and into Fed days. So like every time you get one of these events, it's like willing to go down if it has the reason. But then like you get the good NVIDIA earnings and you get the dovish Fed. And it's like, oh, cool. New leg higher.
Yeah, here we go.
So as long as those two things are standing.
Yeah. So where does that leave us? I mean, what do you think? Are we full tilt? I think
we're full tilt until the long bond the yield on the long bond goes up far enough and fast enough to spook the stuff. And we're nowhere near that. We're like under 4.5 on the 30-year. Flying above 4.5 1/4, then I think stocks kind of notice that and don't like it.
You know, this probably means it's a raging buy, because I'm probably dead wrong. But I think that you've got a problem there too, because if I look at the backdrop that we're looking at, I think one of the things that I would like to own the least in this environment is a 30-year bond.
100%.
There's so much downside there.
All that like higher than the last 40 years of experienced inflation possibilities getting kind of cooked into that is huge.
Well, and then you look at the issuance side of it too, like we've talked about, right? Like, it's not just do I think there's going to be a demand, because if you go into a recession, I'm sure that would be bullish to the 30-year. But here's the other thing. What is treasury issuance going to look like if we go into a recession?
Right. You're talking $3 trillion deficits. I mean.
Well, and then they're going to go even higher than that.
Who's buying that?
Right.
Probably isn't the Japanese now that they're going to start raising rates.
So. Well, who can buy $3.5 trillion a year? Right. There's no pocket out there big enough.
I'll say this. This is something that. Can't think of his name. Jeez. Guy from Northern Ireland. Why can't I think of his name? Anyway, has been talking about for years. Basically, all you got to do at the end of the day is change some of the rules in order to make the banks go out and buy them.
Yeah.
So that balance sheet can take it.
Well,
but that has to, you know, you have to get that regulatory change to happen. So like once that regulatory change happens, like then you ignore that and you buy stocks even harder, but
that's a phone call.
But between now and then, there's just not enough balance sheet to buy all this. There just isn't. Until you know, unless the Fed's just going to do it themselves.
Which makes me wonder too. I haven't really thought about this. Is that, you know, maybe that is the next version. Russell Napier. That was the name I was reading. I knew who you were talking about. Love listening to that guy. Brilliant. It makes me wonder if maybe the Fed. Could that be the new QE?
Yeah, it's private sector QE. I mean,
because it's the same thing, right? The Fed's backing those banks' balance sheets. They just showed us last year that.
And the banks can create money.
Yeah.
Even more so than the Fed can in reality. Yep. So.
And then in a moment's notice, if there's trouble, they'll throw, you know, what's $350 billion between friends?
Right.
So is it any different than the Fed putting it on its own balance sheet?
If anything, it's easier and more stimulative and it's less. There's even kind of in a way less accountability for it. So like it's less obvious.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And it injects real cash into the system as opposed to bank reserves. Well, I guess it does too.
Cause kind of the same.
Cause they've got to go out and buy it with real cash.
Bottom line is they can, it would allow them to fund those massive deficits without it hurting anything, you know, for a while.
Well, and look, I think that's been, as long as this ZERP environment has lasted, I think that's been one of the ways to stay ahead of the game by a step or two, is to look at an issue and extrapolate out and go, okay, let's not try to think about how we're going to solve this, right? Let's figure out what the easiest way to get around it is.
Yeah, it's definitely a path of least resistance type of thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Is that going to be the thing that you know, makes them go, oh man, we're sorry. Like we ran a road here. Like we're going to fix it all. No, they'll find a way around that one too.
Yeah. They will. What other takeaways? You did any other interesting takeaways from his presser or any other thing he said that caught your mind, caught your eye?
Really the big thing for me was the fact that he just hammered away at the phrase, overtime. Like he just went really far out of his way to say overtime. Like we'll get inflation down over time, meaning like, yeah, it just felt like 3 months ago, like, hey, we're gonna get this thing. Like we're gonna slay this dragon real soon here. And then these two prints come up that he's telling you they're not a big deal, but he's also telling you we'll get inflation down over time. Meaning like I tweeted some stuff about like that reminds me of like that's like something I told my mom about cleaning my room when I was a teenager. I'll clean it over time, which is another way of saying like who cares? Like I'm not doing it.
Yeah. Like, F you.
It just reeked of like we don't care.
The arrogance of it too. Like people listening to this stuff, inflation is transitory. Wrong. You know, there's going to be pain. Wrong. I mean, these guys, it really is uncanny. Meaning that you just think the law of averages would swing in their favor at some point and they'd get some of this right. But it really is amazing too, because no matter how long, no matter how many times they step in it, it's gospel. And it really is. You know, the guys were using this analogy for years, so it's certainly not mine. But they really are the modern-day shaman. Never right, never in doubt. You know, it is perplexing. And then he can sit there and make two-year forecasts saying we're going to get it down over time, and he's talking about things 2 years away. You know, like where have you
– They always, of course, have the projections going back. But this is the second year in a row they had below trend growth and they had to revise it up. They had, you know, one of the reasons we're here and they're talking about cuts is because they dramatically underestimated how much inflation would come down. And if they just turned that into like, oh, we better cut because we didn't think inflation would get this low. But they did that right at the time that it starts to pick back up. And hey, like you remember me, like, that's when I changed my tune. Like I was like hardcore about disinflation. And I flipped it and I said, no, like now we're about to get inflation again. So like, if I can see it here in Tacoma, like I don't understand why their 1,000 PhDs couldn't figure out the fact that inflation's probably about to turn around and pick back up.
Well, here's the other thing that's perplexing to me too, that I don't really understand. Okay. The middle class is getting just hammered right now with disinflation, right? You need disinflation. That's what you need. You need prices to come down. You're still accelerating.
Yeah, reaccelerating at that.
So what do these guys care about? And somebody put it on Twitter, you and I were laughing. The Fed chose rich.
Yeah.
You know, and they did. But it just their words are so hollow. And that to me is the really I think that's probably the thing that I'm the most frustrated by is I know you're BSing us. Just come out and give it to us straight. Right? Like, just like, I honestly think at this point in time, it would be better if they did that. Like to really know what they're thinking and what they're looking at, because I just think it's more perplexing because if you listen to everything they've told us, you listen to what they're looking at and where their goalposts are and all that, and now they're going cuts, you're sitting there going, wait a second. I took you at your word when you've said that this is what's going on. Where is this data supporting this?
Right. The whole like, hey, like we have to make sure that we continue to get progress here. And then 2 months of bad prints and they say, oh, that doesn't change the overall story. It literally changes the story.
It 100% changes the story.
You don't have to say like, hey, like oh, we're wrong. You get to say like, look, these two prints were real. These are serious. Like we're on our back foot again.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but was it either CPI or PC, one of the metrics has been either flat to higher for 8 straight months. You've not seen month over month declines for 8 months.
Oh yeah, I mean month over month declines are definitely exceedingly rare now.
Yeah, and for that, for you to look at this environment and go, yeah, we're cutting 3 times before the end of the year, you're just looking around, you're going, what happened that I didn't know about? Like where's the bad thing happening? Is unemployment, and you're looking around just going, you're yelling fire, and I don't see anything.
Labor market's loosening around the edges, but it's been doing that for a year. So like that, you can't really point to that as like your thing.
What's loosening around the edges?
The labor market, like the amount of like job openings has dramatically come down. The amount of like hiring is really slowed. The unemployment rate has moved up. Like all that stuff's true, but all of those things have been trending for like 15 months. So like that's not new. Like that's not your reason to cut.
No, doesn't even make any sense. So, you know, you hate to say it, because if you say it, then we'll get a 10% flush negative at any point. But I'll say it first. I think all systems are a go.
Yeah, it's rational exuberance. You're telling the market you better go higher. Like,
yeah,
you're crazy not to if you're going to cut into strength. That the 1998 analog we've talked about a bunch. Like, it today just like underlined it. It said, yeah, no, that's still there. Like,
yeah,
that's still a real possibility of that level of unhinged asset prices.
Yep. Yeah.
And that creates a lot of future problems, because at some point, if inflation, you know, doesn't just go back to 2.5 and it goes up to 4.5 or something, that they actually do have to get serious about it. And then, you know, everything that everyone's chasing higher right now just gets absolutely rinsed.
Yeah. No, it's a wild setup. Well, do you got anything else for us?
Nope.
It's good to have you back.
Back at it tomorrow.
Yep. Glad and we will. Yeah, we will be back at it tomorrow, kiddos. And hopefully you keep taking this journey with us. Like I said, it's one of documentation, but it really is. And I don't think we're being over dramatic about it. I mean, you're just seeing historic stuff on a day-to-day basis. I don't think that there is a single Fed chair in history that would cut into this right now.
Yeah, well, maybe back in 98.
Well,
even then they had some, like,
they had long-term
reasons to do it, maybe.
Yeah, at least you were worried about the biggest hedge fund in the world.
And the unemployment rate had actually just shot up a little bit.
So. Yeah, and it was coming off, and that was coming right off the tails of the Asian currency crisis.
Right. It was scary stuff
happening. Yeah, there was. There was some serious potential. I mean, obviously they overcooked it. But I'm just looking at this environment going, not even Greenspan wouldn't even cut in this environment. You know, I don't think he would. I mean, I've got no reason to believe he would. And it's almost like, remember you and I talked about for a long time, and I was saying this for a long time, like, people have this attitude that the Fed wants the Fed funds rate lower. And I was like, no, they want it between 5 to 6, like that historical. I don't think they do.
No,
they don't.
They clearly don't. I think they feel like they're really hurting something right now, and they want to back off.
What, and what is that? I mean, we brought up commercial real estate, yeah, but it's not that big.
The big thing. It's like, the future of private equity depends on them to cut. I think, like, you would have real pain there. That's
part. Oh, that makes sense.
That's part of it. Really,
that
really
makes sense. You know, like, Powell's a private equity guy. That makes sense. His private equity buddies are calling him and crying.
Roll debt at these levels, they have a problem.
Yeah, and they should have a problem.
And they should have to roll their debt.
He ought to let those private equity funds burn. Those guys have been investing in nonsense and BS for 15 years. Nobody's called them on it. They mark their own marks on their books. They're doing shady stuff, rolling the debt.
Giving themselves loans.
Blow them out. And he won't do it because they're his buddies. And this is my whole thing about the Federal Reserve. If you think they give a damn about the average consumer and the quote-unquote stability of the economy, you're insane. There is no evidence to support that. There is a preponderance of evidence that supports the fact that they are serving whatever master has written them the biggest check. And I know that sounds very cynical, but at some point, you have to just look at where the data is pointing to, and it ain't pointing to where they say it is. How you look at this environment, the people suffering the most of this environment, it is purely at the hands of inflation, without a question. And the ones that are suffering the most, also the largest number of people, right? And yet you're making choices that most likely are going to accelerate that pain. But you're all about price stability. I was going to try to avoid a Fed rant today, and I thought I had. And then
got it, hopefully a couple people logged off right before the end there. You know, they think you made it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they like to hear the rants. I'm sure there's some of them.
There's clearly some people that like it.
Yeah, Rudy likes it. I know that. Anyway, all right, you guys. Well, thanks for listening. We will be back again tomorrow. I think I got the Fed rant out of my system, so we're going to stick with the data here. But I think this is where the fun starts, and I think this thing's going to get a little out of control. So we'll be documenting that as well. Anyway, we'll see you again tomorrow. You're listening to Know Your Risk Podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.